Carlo on a Tuesday. Show's being presented by Haley Sensing, Union Home Mortgage, Large Anderson, Matt Coulter, Hayden Wyatt, and we're all in the same place for a change. So that's pretty cool. Everybody all right? Lars?
Doing great. Doing great.
Wyatt, what's up in your world?
Nothing much. Just finally good to meet both y'all in person. It's been a minute.
I think we've had two opportunities, and finally we've done it. But I have no doubt that the best team in college football won the national championship last night. Now, do we agree with their methods and some of their ways of going about business and their head coach? Probably not. But, Lars, 34-13, I think the score is actually a little closer than 21 points. But they're the man.
Yeah. And it was a really nice scene after the game. Jim Harbaugh, you know, swallowing up his 84-year-old dad, Jack, in a bear hug. And his mom is there, Jackie, pointing at Jim's chest and yelling, "You did it, you did it." Really nice, nice moment, nice scene. 15-0 record. Michigan closes out the season with wins over Ohio State, Alabama, and Washington. Best team in the country. Best team in the country from day one until the final play of the game. So why? Why? After it was all over, Jim Harbaugh walks into the press conference, meets with the media. What does he feel that he must say?
Did he come out with the innocent?
We're innocent.
Yeah.
We're innocent. What? Huh? You're innocent.
People got fired. Right?
Oh, shall we count the ways that they're innocent?
Why even bring it up, first of all?
Yeah. A couple of off-field issues. So they were so innocent that Jim Harbaugh served a 3-game suspension imposed by Michigan to begin the regular season. So innocent that Jim Harbaugh served another 3-game suspension to end the regular season imposed by the Big Ten. So innocent. Connor Stallions, the architect behind the sign-stealing.
And wasn't he there again?
Was fired after it became public. Yeah, I don't know if he was there last night or not. I think he was. Also, so innocent, Chris Partridge, Michigan's linebacker coach, also was fired because, as he said, he failed to comply with the investigators. So innocent that Jim Harbaugh, most likely, leaving college football for the NFL.
Well, there's
innocent, 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 innocent. Anybody who comes and just says, I'm innocent.
What are they?
Guilty.
Yeah.
Wasn't me.
What's the first thing that goes through your mind when somebody said, "Well, listen, I'm an honest guy." Well, if you got to tell me, you're probably not. Also, you got to tell really, me you're innocent. You're probably not.
This is just a colloquialism. I get it, but when anybody says, "I'm not going to lie,"
guess what?
Does that mean that you normally lie?
And that's a perfect description. And that's immediately what goes through my mind. Okay. You have to state that you're not going to because you have a history of lying your butt off. Yeah. But, you know, there are often times I really question some of Harbaugh's decisions. But the decision to come out and say that before you went, I mean, after you won a national championship, it's beyond poor judgment. It's dumb. Why are you going to bring up the one thing you've been fighting to go 15-0? Why not talk about the 6 guys that came back and could have gone pro? The ones you were pointing out to me earlier?
Yeah, that's the story.
That's why they won the national championship.
Yeah, their top 6 leaders on this team all could have gone pro, and they decided to come back. And when the rest of the team witnessed that, man, it just redlined the intensity of everybody in that building. And look, Michigan, the thing is, I don't think they needed to cheat.
No. But,
because this team is good. And I love how this team was built because it's not through 5 stars. It's not through having a top 3 recruiting class each year. It is identifying who fits into your program and then player development. I mean, well done, Michigan. Well done. And again, it's a great story because this is a team that doesn't play like most teams that have won national championships in the last decade. It's a team that has rich history, but hasn't won a undisputed national championship since the Korean War. It's one of.
What about the one with Lloyd Carr? Was that disputed in some way?
Well, it was split with Nebraska.
Oh, and imagine you remembering that. 12-10.
Hey, you asked.
No, you're right. I did. You're right. But still, it's a mention.
And, you know, the fact that Harbaugh played at Michigan, he went back home to his roots and very beloved, but he almost got fired after the COVID season. What was their record, like 3-6 or something? Indiana and Michael Penix beat them in the COVID season.
Right.
Harbaugh nearly fired. But that's the sort of a big picture overview of what just my takeaway is that I know Michigan fans are saying there's not going to be an asterisk. There's not going to be an asterisk. You know what? There very well could be.
I think there could be. And
I mean, we got Nebraska's coach. We got all these different coaches saying these guys are cheating. Coaches in the same
I don't know why you'd walk in and say we're innocent.
I mean,
but I tell you what, it does reveal to me is that that's so important to him that it must have been an absolute me against the world motivating factor that he used between every single snap. Just a me. You see what I'm talking about? It was a me against the world attitude. On the field, I kind of like the way Michigan plays. Really, really solid, hard-hitting defense and really, really solid, hard-hitting running the football. And I think I've got – this is close. They ended up with 303 yards on the ground. But they had about two-thirds of that after the first quarter. Mm-hmm. And I do want to credit Washington. Like I said, this game – was closer, I think, than the score indicates. And Penix, Michigan threw him off the game in some ways the way they did Milroe.
Michigan had more rushing yards in the first quarter against Washington than they did in the entire game against Alabama.
Well, we haven't even got to that side of the story of how Alabama fans just must be like, are you kidding me? Had so many chances to put Michigan away in that game. And it's like, this is one that just, it got away from Nick Saban. I'm still not sure.
I think it got away from him because Michigan out-schemed him.
I think, yes. I think Michigan and Alabama still, like, are very even. If they played 10 times, what, 5-5, 6-4, maybe either way?
Yeah, and if they all play Georgia again, they might all lose.
Yeah.
Georgia's a, but Alabama beat Georgia. Nobody's arguing that.
No.
But I will not go against anyone if you want to say Michigan's the best team in the nation because Michigan Wolverines are top dog, big cheese, number one.
And they weren't necessarily, we think we know, they weren't cheating when they beat Ohio State, when they beat Alabama, when they beat Washington.
That we know.
That's quite the gauntlet to go through there, last three games of the season.
It is. But, you want. One thing when you do something like that and get caught, you'll be suspected for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Even at the NFL level. I'm thinking he's headed to California.
I think so. I think he is going to take the Chargers job. I really do. You know, he lived in San Francisco before, and now he's going to be heading to L.A., seems to me.
Let's take our first break when we get back. A couple of issues to address here locally. And that's at Kevin Steele. The rumors are he's retiring, and it has escalated so quickly that people are already predicting who's going to be the next defensive coordinator at Alabama. We'll look into that. Auburn's looking for one, too. Auburn's not going to be looking for a play caller because Hugh Freeze says he's going to do that. And then right before we got on the air, Mike Vrabel was fired. So we've got a plate full of Big Noon Sports on a sunny but chilly Tuesday afternoon.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A cold and windy afternoon, mostly cloudy, temperatures settling into the mid to upper 40s. Tonight clearing with a low at 32. A brighter day tomorrow, a good supply of sunshine, the high 48. Thursday, partially sunny and warmer, the high at 59. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 51 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Covering SEC sports like kudzu on the roadside. This is Big Noon Sports.
Brought to you by Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama broker. Matt, Lawrence, Wyatt, the gang is all here. Want to remind you that you can always join the show if you just dial the digits 205-342-9904. I've noticed that Christian and Corey are getting a lot of response through the app, and I don't plug that enough, but you can go pick up the Tide 100.9 app. It allows you to listen and also allows you to ask questions and make comments online. So, Lars, we need to follow through on that more. Now, Kevin Steele, this is his third stint at Alabama. He also had a stint. This guy is an impressive defensive coordinator, and I thought he had a great year. But he has also been the DC at Clemson, LSU, Auburn, and Miami. In addition to that, he had a short 3-year stint with Baylor as head coach. But this, by all reports, and here the one I'm reading here is from Barrett Salee from CBS Sports, but apparently he is what?
No, I like Barrett a lot.
Oh, but apparently, Kevin Steele's going to go ahead and retire. And now, on the tee, Lars Anderson, who's going to replace him?
I think the replacement's already on staff. But I also, it should be noted what a great job Kevin Steele did in 2023. His sort of signature, I think, on the season was his ability to make second half adjustments. Alabama's defense allowed just 8.4 points per game in second halves this season, one of the best in the country. And Alabama's defense under Steele finished 16th in scoring defense, 18th in total defense. And I think one of the things that he really brought was a sense of discipline and accountability to the defense, because remember, it has been defensive penalties that have plagued Alabama over the last few years, and Alabama has improved its total penalties on defense by nearly 30 in 2023. So anyway, good job by Kevin Steele, 66 years old, and I think he's just he's ready to get out of the game, man. It's a grind. It's a grind. We both know that. So I think the obvious choice is Treverius Robinson, who's been on the Alabama staff as a secondary coach, been on staff since 2022, has extensive SEC coaching experience, Auburn, Florida, South Carolina. He had a larger responsibility this season because Steele was up in the box. Robinson was down on the field. And so he was the one that would relay the call from the booth to the defense. So he's intimately familiar with exactly what was going on every single play. And also, oh, by the way, he coached, Caleb Downs, first team All-American freshman, coached Kool-Aid McKinstry, first team All-American, projected first round pick. Coach Terrion Arnold, first team All-American. I mean,
first rounder. Probably.
First rounder.
Y'all remember about week four, Lane Kiffin had a press conference and said, "I'm not entirely sure Kevin Steele's the one calling the plays up in that booth there. It might be T Rob down there on the sideline." What do y'all y'all think there was any truth to that? Now that we know Steele retired.
It's possible. I mean,
he had a lot of input.
Why would Lane just say that out of the clear blue sky? I mean, Lane says some crazy stuff, but it's usually rooted in element of truth.
He's known to be a little bit out there, but man, when he's on, he hits the nail right on the head.
Yeah, so I would, that's my guess. That would be my vote, is Treverius Robinson. And then you still have Charlie Strong on staff.
Would that be a maturity and age?
Yeah, exactly. Like Strong could be like his consigliere. You know what?
Exactly.
It's perfect.
Him on staff as a defensive analyst, And that's where he's been for, what, a year or two?
How long has Paul been back with Alabama?
He joined staff as an analyst, and I think they'll elevate him to a position coach, right? But really, I think his role is going to be a sounding board for Robinson. Again, that's just my guess, because I think at this point in his career, Nick Saban doesn't want to bring somebody from outside the family. And
that's a tough adjustment.
It could be somebody who has coached with Nick before, but it's not going to be like a bring in a young guy like a Pete Golding or something like that. You know, I just think with 2-3 years left in his career, he wants guys who are already in the building. Robinson is known as a really good recruiter, and so. During the 2024 recruiting cycle, he signed 8 defensive backs and 7 of them. He was the lead recruiter on 7 DBs. And of those 7, of those 8 that he signed, 7 were 4 stars or higher. Like this guy is the real deal.
Well, if you can coach, recruit, and successfully handle DBs under the DB King, And that, of course, is Nick Saban.
I mean, doesn't it seem like obvious? Like, to me, it seems like if you're not going to give Robinson a chance to do it now, when are you going to do it?
Well, I'll tell you what, if you don't,
you might lose.
He'll end up at Auburn.
Yeah.
Auburn's looking for a defensive coordinator, too. They come up with these titles, you know, different titles. Like, for instance, Robinson and Strong could be co-defensive coordinators. It's just a moniker.
It could be, but Robinson would be the guy. Again, it would be a nice, like, 1-2 punch there, don't you think?
Absolutely. It certainly worked this year in a time where when Alabama's offense was struggling, defense was always stepping up. But just as a name, Hugh Freeze's defensive coordinator, Ron Roberts, is evidently going to Florida. And his title, this is a new one, I hadn't heard this one, he would be the executive head coach of defense.
I like that. I've never heard that before.
I'll tell you what, that's pretty fancy. The executive. Why? He's the executive head coach. He just the head coach of the defense.
Wasn't that similar to Kevin Steele's title here in 2008? Wasn't he the defensive head coach and a special assistant to the head coach in 2008?
That's really good memory.
I was 7 years old at that time.
Elephant memory.
And how old are you now? How old are you now?
22.
There's your answer. You could have done that 20 years ago.
No.
Really? You know, back in the day, it was linebacker coach, head coach, offensive line coach.
Our buddy Robbie Glenn just texted me, Freddie Roach.
Could he make that jump?
I don't know. Maybe we can get Robbie on later in the show to advocate for Freddie Roach.
Russ Bollinger will be on with us on the other side to talk. He's a Detroit guy. He will talk Michigan. And big basketball game tonight at Coleman. Brian Passink, who is the color analyst for the Crimson Tide Sports Network, will be joining us as well. And you can too on our app and via the phones, 205-342-9904.
I'm a sports talk in Alabama. This is Big Noon Sports.
The national champ. They defeated the Huskies 34-13. And here to talk more about that and the NFL and the USFL. I'll get to that in a minute, Lars.
Russ Bollinger, one of my really good friends who met at the Combine in Indianapolis probably about a decade ago, and had many dinners, and we just have had a really great friendship, relationship for quite a while. And Russ also happens to live in Detroit and played for the Lions for many years. So, Russ, how are you doing?
Yes,
how's the weather there? Is it
I'm I'm sitting outside. It's about 35 degrees and raining, so it's not snowing. That's a plus. and everybody's hungover, didn't go to work today.
All right, yep. So give us your assessment of the game last night, and were you surprised by anything Michigan did or anything that Washington didn't do?
Well, let me start with Washington. I'm a big fan of that program. I'm a West Coast guy originally, and their head coach, DeBear. What a great success story. And I saw one game this year on TV, and that happened to be the very first Washington-Oregon game. That was the best college football game I ever saw. And the quarterback for Washington was fabulous that night. And long story short, I thought, wow, they got a good team. Next thing you know, now they're playing Michigan. And two really typical kind of different teams. You know, one plays power football run game, which is Harbaugh, which is why I love him. He's, he's old school. He's old school, which is kind of my thing. And the other guy's passing game. So it was it was kind of a show of passing game against the run game. And Coach Harbaugh stuck to what he knows. You know, that is old. That's old Bull Schembechler football here in the Rust Belt. And I'm a big fan of Rust Belt football. As a scout and a former West Coast guy, you know, there's an emphasis on football here in the state of Michigan and in the Rust Belt. And I know there is down south, too. And don't get me wrong there. I mean, we can compare that all day long. You know, and Michigan got a chance to play Alabama. I got a lot of respect for Coach Saban and a lot of respect for Alabama football. But, you know, Michigan, this was their year. And I still stay in touch with a lot of my scouting friends. I might not know the personnel, but I know all the scouts. And they were all coming through Michigan and saying, man, they're loaded. They got at least 20 guys that are going to get drafted, not, you know, guys that get actually drafted. So Harbaugh had a lot of guys coming back. They were built for this season. They go 15-0, and I'm a huge fan of Jim, because he came through our training camp in 2001 at the end of his career as an NFL quarterback. He was towards the end, and we had a brand new coach, Marty Morningwig, and all the scouts wanted Harbaugh to be our core. Couldn't run. We just wanted a tough guy. And, and when he was with Chicago, he beat us a lot. And he's that kind of, you know, he's not that, CEO type that is very popular now in college and in pro football. He's the old school throwback coach, with dumb stories, motivational techniques, stuff like that. And I think the people here in Ann Arbor, and I live real close by, I think with all the problems they had this year, you know, they overcame a lot of stuff. And I think their motto was, you know, Michigan against everybody versus everybody, which was pretty much true. But if you notice what I saw last night was power football. And at first, Washington was really competing, but they, you know, power football is built to wear you down. And they wore them down. And I think the defense just really played well against a really good quarterback. I mean, you can say what you want. That kid, you know, he was making plays, and then the defense just rose to the occasion. And then, you know, when you have two running backs that have over 100 yards, you know, it really kind of shocked me, because I hadn't really seen Edwards do much this year. And, you know, that second gear speed was unbelievable. He was just running away from DBs who had angles on him. And you don't see that much. And he's a powerful guy. It's just fun for an old offensive lineman to watch, because I grew up with that style of football. And nowadays, as we all know, the passing game took over basically when fantasy football started going wild. It just, the passing game just seemed to increase everywhere. And I get it. I'm an old high school quarterback. I understand that. But it was fun because, you know, there's a lot of people here in Michigan who were wanting to get rid of Coach Harbaugh. And I know he just got a new agent, and he, you know, he's going to look at the NFL. He's kind of sitting pretty. And it's just a good family. I know his dad. I know his brother. Just they're Rust Belt football, and I'm proud to be part of that. You know, I was never a big Michigan fan one way or the other, but this year I just started right root for, you know, soon as Jim started having all those problems with the suspensions and stuff like that.
So
I'm thinking now this is a big football team. They got big they got size, talent, and now you're going to make them angry. So I'm happy for the folks at Michigan.
We definitely got a lot to unpack here, and you are you're the right guy to do this. All right, you played in the NFL offensive line for nearly a decade, nearly three decades as a scout. You've spent a lot of time in Tuscaloosa. Gosh, you even talked to my classes before.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun.
I'm a big fan of Lars Anderson.
Oh, well,
Professor Anderson.
Were you surprised in the national semifinal game that Michigan up front, kind of on both sides of the ball, they were able to push Alabama around?
You know, I was surprised. I mean, let's face it, Saban plays good football, and especially on that side of the ball. That's his deal. Always has, always will. He's got good players. But there was that extra incentive with Michigan this year for me, you know, with all the stuff that went on, and then he had all those guys coming back to put the year together. He was able to keep enough guys healthy, but I mean, guys were making plays last night that also made plays against Alabama. You know, that was just a tremendous game. You know, and I'm a big fan of Alabama's quarterback. I mean, that's the kind of guy I like. You know, and he's probably not the most accurate passer, but he did throw a big bomb against Auburn and pulled him out of that one. So the guy is dangerous and good. Really good quarterback. So it was an evenly matched team. You know, you go out to the West Coast and play in the Rose Bowl, which was, you know, as a kid growing up, that was my dream. And as far as them pushing around Alabama, that offensive line that they have, and if you notice, you know, I got a chance to play with John Robinson, who was power football at USC. And when I went to the Rams late in my career, it was his first year, and he described power football. And what he says now is interesting, because I had a chance to play with Billy Sims with the Lions, who was a fabulous running back, and we played power football with Billy. We weren't any good until Billy got on the team. He was there 5 years, and he got hurt. Should be in the Hall of Fame, but probably won't be because he didn't play long enough. But John Robinson said about power football, he goes, the definition is we might not, you know, run the ball very well in the first quarter, the second quarter, and the third quarter, but we're going to keep running the ball, and we might not get enough first downs in the first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, but in the fourth quarter, we're going to wear down that defense, and the defensive line will not be able to raise their arms because they're going to be so beat up. And I really felt like the big guys from Ann Arbor really wore Washington down last night, and then they wore down Alabama. And physically, you know, I don't want to get any controversy here on strength coaches because a lot of them are my friends, but I really believe the guy at Michigan is one of the better strength coaches in the country. And he's been at Arkansas and Wisconsin, played at Wisconsin. And I just feel like in that fourth quarter, you know, that's when the dominance came. And when you play power football, that's what happened last night. And the guys from Washington were worn down. And I think the guys from Alabama were worn down. And not too many coaches have, the patience, that Harbaugh has, to, you know, not start throwing the ball when the game gets close. He keeps running the ball, because he's trying to wear down the opponent. And that's what happened. And you won't see that a lot anymore. So it's fun for me, for an old school guy, to watch that.
Speaking of old school, when we get back, I got to ask you about playing for the Memphis Showboats.
I love it.
Because Memphis and Birmingham did not like each other at all.
No, that's true.
It's cool.
No. Matt was the play-by-play radio.
Well, I covered. They were on my beat, but yeah, I'm up there in age. I'm up there with your age, Russ.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. That was the greatest experience of my life. I got to play for the Memphis Showboats.
Cool.
12 games. And Pepper Rogers was the coach, and he was the most fun ever.
Let's talk about it. Can you hang out for another segment?
Yeah, I'm
awesome.
Cool. The original USFL. We'll talk with Russ about that as you continue to listen to Big Noon Sports presented by Haley Sansing Union Home Mortgage.
On the next Inside the Locker Room with Coach Wimp Sanderson and Barry Sanderson.
Tune in Tuesday, 7:30. We'll have Kevin Skarbinski on. We'll look at the Michigan-Washington game. We'll also have Coach Jack Crow on at 8. We'll break down that game as well. And also look at the Alabama Crimson Tide and what they need to do to improve next season.
Inside the Locker Room, weekdays 7 to 9 a.m. on Tide 100.9 and Tide100.9.com.
This is a special...
Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A cold and windy afternoon, mostly cloudy, temperatures settling into the mid to upper 40s. Tonight clearing with a low at 32. A brighter day tomorrow, a good supply of sunshine, the high 48. Thursday, partially sunny and warmer, the high at 59. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 51 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the Plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Our guest is Russ Bollinger, who played 9-10 years pro football. One of those years, though, was with the USFL on the Memphis Showboats. And that's when I'd first gotten into television. I was covering these teams, and it was just a blast. And you played for the Memphis Showboats. And here I am reading your bio. It says actor, broadcaster, playwright, sports writer, NFL scout, NFL player. But the one thing that popped off the page to me is you played for Pepper Rogers, which, first of all, just take a minute and talk about Pepper Rogers, because he was unique to the world of coaching football.
Absolutely. What a character. Really good football coach, and I was aware of I grew up in central coast of California, and I was Mark Harmon was an option quarterback. Pepper Rogers brought the option football game to the UCLA, which had never really been on the West Coast, and he had a lot of success, and Mark Harmon was his quarterback, and I got to do some movie business with Mark Harmon later in life. What a great guy. You know, was it his grandfather or his father? I guess it was his father that played at Michigan. Yeah. Long story short, Pepper, a fellow by the name of John Banaszak and myself were two veteran NFL players, and he wanted to sprinkle in some veteran guys, and I was between contracts with the Rams towards the end of my career, and they didn't want to sign me to the beginning of the year. And I said, well, that means Big Rusty's a free agent. I'm going to check out this USFL, which one of the greatest decisions I ever made. I got to go play for Pepper down in Memphis, and I'd never lived in the South. You know, I'd played some football games down there and really never got a chance to get familiar with the South. And when my wife and I just love Memphis. They treated us so kind. And Pepper was the very motivational, a lot of gimmicks to get you fired up. and the players loved him. We, you know, trained at a little college there in Memphis called Rhodes College. We ate with the student body breakfast in the morning. That was crazy. But he was, you know, we had some talent now. You know,
Reggie White.
Reggie was young. That
Marcus Dupree.
Did you do Marcus Dupree? Marcus Dupree. Yeah. I just remember our quarterback was Mike Kelly from Georgia Tech, I believe, and his nickname was Killer Kelly. And I'm thinking, oh, so you know, I'm fairly new to the team when I joined it, and I said, Killer, I got to ask you a question, dude. What, you know, are you a trained killer? What's the deal with Killer Kelly? I get it. And he said, no, dude, Killer Weed. And I said, oh my God. Yeah, you know, Mike was a great guy, but Mike, you know, back in that day, you know that was his drug of choice, where mine was alcohol. And I said, Mike, we're gonna get along. I got a lot of buddies out in California do that weed. But I didn't know he was playing on it, because there was one game where he lined up underneath me at right guard as the quarterback, and I had to wave him off. Said, Mike, you got the wrong ass right here, boy, damn. And I said, Mike, you got to quit doing that weed before the game. You do it after the game. And what a neat guy, and he was a good quarterback. God, I can't remember the quarterback that also played from Alabama.
It was Walter Lewis.
Walter was awesome. What, you know, talk about night and day, killer
yeah, you're weed. Exactly Walter right.
Lewis was very religious, and I love Walter. And, you know, they Coach played them both. You know what I'm saying? And we had a really big running back that I can't remember his name. God, we had talent.
Matt, do you now know why Russ is one of my greatest sources of all time?
I'd just love to sit down and drink several beers with you. It just seems like it'd be a lot of fun.
That's why I fell in love with scouting. Because, you know, when I got into scouting in 1994, I was on the first original scouting staff with the Jacksonville Jaguars. And Tom Coughlin was the head coach GM, and he wanted to hire guys that had never been scouts. He wanted college recruiting coordinators only. He hired a staff of seven guys that were all recruiting coordinators. And, you know, and he pushed us around pretty well, you know. And I was 40 years old at the time, and I'd played 10 years in the league. And, of course, Coach Coughlin had, you know, had coached. He was just coming out of Boston College. And he's old school, you know, he's all dressed up, and he starts punking me a lot. And I'm going, oh, this ain't going well, you know. I like Coach God. I told him one time, I said, Coach, I like you a lot, but man, you abuse me like a, you know, an 18-year-old kid that's a freshman at your college here. I said that I can't get used to that. And he said, well, you better get tougher. And so he started questioning my toughness, which was not right. But anyway, I come home and told my wife after 2 years, I said, I don't know if I can sign this next contract with this guy. I might, you know, get in a wrestling match with him and choke him out, and that's the head coach. And my wife said, well, you better find another job before you do that, because you'll never work in the industry again. She was right. So I jumped back with the Lions, which was great. I just love the people in Detroit, which by the way, the rumor now is, you know, Michigan's won the national championship. The Lions got a chance to be in the Super Bowl. And if we win that, I told all my friends from California, you guys will be moving here. You know, this will be the first time people move to Michigan.
I didn't think about that.
Nobody can visit me.
Lions and,
No, this is rare what's going on. I'm really proud of the Lions. I'm a big fan of the Ford family, and I'm so happy that they finally had some success. And I worked for him 9 years as a scout and seven as a player. And we had our tough time, you know, it's like I had a teammate just tell me the other day, Russell, great guys, great talent, just unfortunate. You know, this the happenstance of not ever getting in the playoffs, you know, just never pulling it off. And I think, guys, I really believe here now that I'm almost 70, you know, and been around the NFL for 35 years. And what you see down at Alabama is leadership. You know, Coach Saban's a leader, period. And he gets people, he can talk to the players every day, which is a rare quality for any human being to motivate people every day, every day, every day. He knows how to push buttons. And I think Harbaugh's the same way. And what happens with, you know, the guys that fail in the NFL is they can't do that. And it's really hard with today's players, really hard, because they're basically millionaires.
What do you think of Dan Campbell, head coach of the Lions?
Absolutely love him. Absolutely love Dan. I scouted him. He's exactly what he was as a player. He's old school. He'll fight you every play. He'll block you. He's a tight end that's not, you know.
Did he have a dip in when he played?
Yeah, he always. Yeah, he dipped. Yeah, you know, it was funny. He had long hair, but he was, you know, had some of that redneck quality of dipping, and I was a big dipper myself. And, you know, the moment he said, we're going to bite kneecaps, I count me in, coach. I'll do whatever, you know. You know, because the city of Detroit is blue collar, and they take a lot of lumps now. We take a lot of abuse here. You know, my friends in California give me a hard time about living here, and we just can't leave because of the people. Just love the people of Detroit. You know, you got all the European cultures here. Everybody has their own style, and I get along with everybody. It's been fun. But back to Memphis, we were good. We had a good team, and I'll never, ever forget this. We're coming back from Portland, and we're out in Portland, and we won a close game. And I'd never played in Portland because, you know, there wasn't an NFL team there, and it's basically a baseball stadium, and, you know, and it's, you know, just unique. And we beat Portland. I forget they were the Blazers or whatever, and we're breakers. Coming back on the plane from, yeah, the Breakers from Portland. And Pepper was really excited because we were starting to have success, and he might have got into the sauce a little bit. And he had this old airplane, you know, pilot hat, like a leather hat type they used to wear with the goggles. He put that on, started singing, you know, off into the blue wander or whatever it was. And we were all having beers. You know, Pepper was really good about feeding us beer. Now, I'll tell you what, because it was hotter than hell there, and we'd get there at 6 in the morning, when we'd be done by noon before it got real hot. Right at noon, he brought the beer out.
Awesome.
So all the old guys, we stuck around till 3 and told our wives, like, yeah, we lifted weights, and we'd get home around 6 o'clock. And we had a pretty good buzz going, you know, and my wife says, I like it better when you come home after a showboat practice. I said, yeah, we practice hard, honey.
Great stuff. But, we got to get to the top of the hour. You know the business.
Okay.
Very much appreciate your time, and I'm not going to let this go by. We're going to do this again
very soon.
Yeah, thanks, please.
Thanks,
my friend. Available. I'm retired. And I got plenty of free time.
You got a lot of stories. A lot of stories.
Okay. I look forward to it.
Nice talking to you guys. Have fun. Right. And hey, shout out to the people down in Mobile there at the Senior Bowl. Those lovely people for 25 years I hung out down there with.
Actually, we should have you on before the Senior Bowl so you can kind of give us how it all works.
Especially since your years with scouting. That's cool. Yeah. All right. Thanks, man. It's been a blast.
Yep. Yeah, God bless you guys.
You too, as well. Got to get to the top of the hour. You're listening to Big Noon Sports, presented by Haley Tensing, Union Home Mortgage.
WTBC Tuscaloosa and W265 CG Tuscaloosa, a Town Square Media station. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app. From the Fox Sports studios in Los Angeles, here's Kevin Wired.
Major developing news in the NFL as the Tennessee Titans have announced they have fired head coach Mike Vrabel. This comes after he had a difficult stretch over the last couple seasons where they just went 6-18 and 1-9 in AFC South division games. Other NFL news, Adam Schefter saying that Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin ruling out T.J. Watt for Pittsburgh's playoff matchup against the Buffalo Bills this weekend. He's been previously diagnosed with a grade 3 MCL sprain. The Dolphins, according to NFL Network, signing veteran pass rusher Justin Houston to bolster their defensive line depth heading into the postseason. In the NBA, Tyrese Halliburton carried off the court against the Celtics last night because of a hamstring issue, and an MRI, according to ESPN, revealed that it is a grade 1 left hamstring sprain.
From T-Town to the Plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Presented by Haley Sensing, Union Home Mortgage. Just looking up some more statistics and information from last night's 34-13 win. Michigan wins the national championship over the Huskies. You may not like Harbaugh. You may not like the way they got there, the scandals and all. But when it comes to between the lines, Michigan's the best team in college football in 2023, /24. Where they move forward now, I don't think Harbaugh. I think he's probably already talking with, I was almost going to say San Diego. But he's already talking with the Chargers. He wanted that national championship. Now he wants Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible because after the 2020 season, which was the COVID year, Michigan went 2-4, and it looked at the time that Harbaugh could be fired and didn't get fired. And now over the past three seasons, I think you could make the argument that Michigan has been as consistently dominant as any team in college football, beaten Ohio State three times in a row, won the Big Ten championship, qualified for the playoffs each year, and now they finally get to the point where they lift the big trophy. And as you and I were talking before the show, Matt, one of my good friends who's an author has been with the Michigan team all year, and this all goes back to five or six guys at Michigan who decided to return this season instead of going to the NFL draft. And who knows what role NIL played in that. But nonetheless, these guys were all the leaders of the team. And once the most important players on your team decide to come back when they could have gone off to the NFL, that suddenly infuses the entire building with a sense of urgency, a sense of responsibility, a sense of accountability. And man, they just talked about it all year, and my friend was just saying, "There's something going on here in Ann Arbor. This is different. This is different." And I think we saw that play out both against Alabama and Washington. I did want to say, 1 year from now, 1 year from today, guess what's going to be happening
on 1/9/2025. I'm going to have to just go ahead and give it to me.
National semifinals, baby. January 9th is the Orange Bowl. January 10th is the Cotton Bowl. CFP Championship is going to be January 20th. First round next year. First round begins December 20th with one game. December 21st, we're going to have three games at the home sites.
Wow.
Then you got the quarters, December 31 at the Fiesta Bowl. Then January 1 in the quarters, you got the peach, you got the rose, and you got the sugar. And then January 9, 1 year from today, got the Orange Bowl. January 10, got the Cotton Bowl. January 20th, played in the ATL. National championship. How much fun is that going to be next year?
Yeah, when you just mentioned it now, I just thought about all the television possibilities. I wonder why they do the 1/3 instead of a 2/2. You understand what I mean?
Is the 20th maybe a Sunday? Is there an NFL?
20th is a Friday. That's also currently.
How do you know that off the top of your head? What are you, crazy?
That is like Rain Man stuff.
Golly.
I've been looking over this for the past week. Ever since we lost that Rose Bowl, it's like December 20th. If we play on December 20th, I will be there. I will not miss that game.
Okay, boy, how fun would that be? That's fine because home, you scared me a little bit, to be honest with you.
Home playoff game. A home playoff game.
Bryant Denny is going to absolutely explode the first time they host a college football playoff game here in Tuscaloosa.
And that's the way to open it up, too.
Isn't it exciting to talk about?
Yeah.
Man.
I got a little giddy.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yeah, but just watching that, I'm now just realizing in a year we'll be watching those games. Man, probably going to have to seek detox after all that.
I mean, that's kidding. The thing. The playoffs are going to go on for a month. We get a month of great college football. It will be
like, kind of like NCAA.
Division two
basketball. No,
sorry.
Basketball lasts over a month, and it's cool because you got something to look forward to all the time. Hey, good topic. I like that. All right. Anyway, one other thing, one other note that I don't think we went through in the first hour, but I think it is significant, is that there were only two turnovers in that football game last night, both Penix picks. And that had a big difference, especially the one he threw one coming out of the gate in the third quarter.
I think the D-line, Michigan's D-line, got him rattled. And there was one throw on a fourth down, help me out, where the wide receiver was cutting open, looked like it could have been a touchdown, and Penix just missed it. I swear
he missed it bad.
He has not missed that throw all year long.
Was that early in the ball game when Romo Dunes had to twist his body and try to catch that?
Yeah.
Yeah, he'd have walked in had Penix put that on him.
Yeah, I think it was 14-3 at that point.
So
could have been 14-10, totally different dynamic. And then if they score, if everything holds to form, it could have been up 17-14 going into the half and then getting the ball first to start the second half. Ugh, really is a game of inches.
Truly is. But you got Michigan. They are the national champs. And there's a certain part of me. I'm not a big Michigan fan now. I think I was maybe back when Bo was there and since. First of all, I'll fight anybody that says they're not one of the best-looking uniforms in all of college football. Those helmets.
Sure.
I mean, it's unique, literally.
I hate the whole concept of a Michigan man, though. That is so pretentious and just drives me nuts.
What, you mean like a Michigan man? It's, I'm Michigan and I'm a man, and that means I'm better than any other type of man.
Yeah, and Jim Harbaugh is like, I'm going to be buried a Michigan man now.
All right. Uh-oh. Good for you. Oh. Well, he may be buried a Charger man.
Although the last two times Michigan's played Alabama, it was Tom Brady's final college football game. Overtime, Orange Bowl. Brady threw for like 400.
And 390 of them came in the last part of the game.
Yeah.
Gee, did he go on and accomplish that in the National Football League? Yeah.
I still don't understand what he had the greatest game of his college career, that final game against Alabama, and he doesn't go to the sixth round, 199th pick. Like, just because the guy ran like a 5 foot or 5'9" 40, like, your grandma can run faster than that, but who cares?
It's all about
accuracy.
He can
operate in short space,
and leadership.
Anyway.
Joe Montana, who many would consider one of the best ever, I don't think he was taken to like the fourth or fifth round.
Third?
Mm-hmm. What are you? Now I'm surrounded by Rain Men. Not Michigan men, Rain Men. We'll be back, and Brian Pasink, who is a color analyst for Crimson Tide Sports Network, will be with us in a minute as Alabama takes on South Carolina tonight at Coleman.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A cold and windy afternoon, mostly cloudy, temperatures settling into the mid to upper 40s. Tonight clearing with a low at 32. A brighter day tomorrow, a good supply of sunshine, the high 48. Thursday, partially sunny and warmer, the high at 59. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 52 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
More Big Noon Sports coming up.
Big Noon Sports, sponsored in part by Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama broker. Joined now by Brian Passink. Brian, I was looking through, after I saw that South Carolina was 13-1, my eyes bugged a little bit. Then I dialed up their schedule. They lost to Clemson, but their victories have been over Charleston Southern, Winthrop, Elon, Florida A&M. Not the most impressive schedule. But then I look, and they opened with a win against Mississippi State. So they're 1-0 in the SEC, 68-62. This is a long way of asking you a question. Is Clemson any good? I mean, excuse me, South Carolina.
I think so. I mean, listen, you have radically different scheduling philosophies between Nate Oates and Lamont Paris, and really Nate Oates and several SEC coaches. Alabama's, we've talked about year in and year out, if not the number one overall strength of schedule in college basketball, right there. And I think it's been the last two or three years that Alabama has had the toughest non-conference schedule in the country. And I mean, listen, the results speak for themselves. Alabama's won four championships. You know, when you combine SEC regular season and tournament championships in the last 3 years, couple of Sweet 16s, and that doesn't come from having a gaudy looking record in the non-conference. It comes from challenging yourself and preparing yourself for SEC play. But I'll tell you this, South Carolina, Ole Miss, although they have not had the most difficult non-conference schedules, they've been two of the big surprises in the SEC, and the win over Mississippi State on Saturday in Columbia, South Carolina, got my attention because while they have not played nearly the schedule Alabama has, they came out of in SEC play with an impressive win over a really good Mississippi State team.
You know, I thought Coach Oates's comments after the win at Vanderbilt on Saturday night, again, 78-75, were really revealing, like more so than usual. He said, hey, we're up 33-15, up 18, we're humming along, playing well in the first 10 minutes, then the ball quit moving. Guys got a little bit selfish. Interesting word, in my opinion. We didn't score in the last 4 minutes, driving into double teams and the tight quarters, turn the ball over 16 times. Is this... And then he used the word wake-up call. He hopes it's a wake-up call, especially for guys like Estrada, Nelson, right, who are just getting into – it was their first SEC game. Were you surprised just by the candor of Nate Oates, or is he always that way?
I am never surprised by the candor of Nate Oates. He is as honest as any coach in the country, and I appreciate that about him. And listen, while – you know, he had some pretty pointed comments about what happened when you're up 18 and, you know, you let your foot off the gas and maybe lose focus on both ends of the floor. That doesn't change the fact that, well, you know, he made the comments about maybe there was some selfish play, you know, in that span. You know, this is an unselfish basketball team. And just, you know, because maybe a guy or two was maybe, you know, looking, took some quick shots or maybe should have found an open man. That doesn't change the fact that this Alabama team on the offensive end has been the best in college basketball. The stats back that up. They are unselfish. And even though, you know, you go through ups and downs over the course of the season, over the course of the game, I really like where this team is offensively, obviously. And then, you know, a guy like Aaron Estrada, who's been playing his best basketball. I mean, he's flirted with a triple-double a couple games ago, you know, almost had one, was one assist away. He's doing it all. I mean, he's scoring in double digits, rebounding the ball at the guard position at a high level, finding open teammates. So he's doing so much for this team. But I think Alabama, obviously, against a Vanderbilt team that you were a heavy favorite against, even though Memorial Gym in Nashville historically is a very difficult place to play for Alabama and much of the SEC. It hasn't been too tough for Nao's team. I think he's 4-0 now in Nashville. But this team did not play its best, and I think they did let their foot off the gas, and all these
games or learning opportunities, win, lose, or draw. And you love to have learning opportunities and a win, especially in the league and on the road.
Mark Sears is the real constant that runs through the Crimson Tide. Just talk a little bit about his game. I've loved to watch him grow. And now he's the man. And Lars asked me the other day, and I'll pass along the question to you, is this guy got NBA talent?
Well, I mean, he's playing as well as anybody in the SEC. Second team All-SEC a year ago, preseason second team. And he's looking like a Player of the Year candidate. There's not many guys in college basketball playing it as high level as Mark Sears right now. And I do think he's got a chance to play at the next level. But right now, I sure am enjoying what he's doing in an Alabama uniform. He was quick and explosive and you know, strong a year ago. In all those areas, he's drastically improved. I mean, his explosiveness and strength around the basket at 6'1", his ability to score in traffic, take contact, get to the free throw line. He has been playing so well, and that's important for this team to have guys, you know, veteran guys. You don't have many guys back with experience from a year ago. He's one of them, and he's playing as well as anybody.
I've always been fascinated with Grant Nelson, even when he's back at North Dakota State. I actually follow North Dakota State basketball, believe it or not, and he just absolutely tore it up there from 2020-2023. Transfers to Alabama, expectations are really high, 6'11", can shoot. Where are we in the development of Grant Nelson and just his acclimation to SEC basketball and just really elite, you know, top-level Division I basketball?
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the best, I think, most talented players in the SEC. He's been up and down on the offensive end, and it is a little different playing at the mid-major level as opposed to high-major basketball, and especially when you play the schedule that Alabama has. I think it will prepare not only Grant but the rest of his team as you get into the heart of SEC play. But he can, at 6'11", can really handle the ball. He's quick. He's athletic. Can get to the basket. Needs to become a more consistent three-point shooter. I know he's working on it, and nowhere do you have the green light more than playing for Nate Oates in Alabama, so he's going to get his opportunities. I know he's put the work in, and I think when he starts adding that to his game, he's going to become even more difficult to stop on the offensive end. But at 6'11", he can block shots. He's a versatile defender, and he is a matchup nightmare because – at his height, he handles the ball like a guard. He's a good decision maker with the ball in his hands. So I'm looking forward to seeing him get better and better as the year progresses.
Who are a couple other guys that you see potential in? And let me focus in maybe on first-year guys.
Well, I mean, first year in the Alabama program, you got a bunch. And I love the way that Aaron Estrada is coming on. You know, if you wouldn't have said first year guys, I would have said Rylan Griffin. So I'll at least mention his name, even though he's not a first year guy. Sam Walters is gaining more confidence. He's getting more minutes. He's getting better defensively, but he's as good a shooter as there is in the SEC. At 6'9", can get his shot off. So, there's a lot of guys that I think will get better as the year progresses. And that's what I like about this team. You look at so many new guys. Whether it's high school, whether it's transfer portal, they are getting better. They're getting better on the defensive end. And when they get better on that end of the floor, and Sam Walters is a great example. I mean, he's a freshman. He's 6'9". He hasn't really ever had to guard, which is the case for a lot of high school players. But he's bought in. He wants to be good on that end of the floor. And I think he's going to get better and better. And Mohamed Wagi, the transfer from West Virginia, such an important player on the interior. He's had a tendency to get in foul trouble in some of these non-conference games, but he's going to play a key role as well. Just has to stay on the floor, but a really good rebounder and defender.
Brian, on the national scene, and you've been courtside because Alabama's played them. a bunch of the top three, four teams in the country. Who would you say is kind of the team to beat, or maybe two teams to beat right now?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, Arizona and Purdue, I mean, they've been number one in the country a lot of the year. You know, I think both of those teams are as good as anybody. I've seen Kansas, not in person, but on TV. Kentucky has a chance to be in that area. The SEC with Tennessee. I mean, there's so many good teams around the country. But it's hard to beat Arizona, Purdue. Having seen them up close, I think both of those teams are national championship worthy. But it's going to be fun watching conference play as teams kind of get into it. This time of year, it's a great time of year for college basketball, and maybe see who is able to separate themselves a little bit and improve. And you know, looking forward to watching the league and the SEC, and hopefully Alabama. I think they'll have a chance to be one of those top teams. But if you're a top team in the SEC, then you got a chance to make some serious noise in March, and I think Alabama will be one of those teams.
Brian, have a great broadcast. I know that you will. I will actually be watching your daughter play at Mountain Brook tonight. So I'll make sure and pull for him as every papa would do. All right? Pull for
her. Well, I appreciate it. I wish I could be two places at once. Yeah, so, big night of hoops.
Hey, thanks, Brian. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys.
All right. You're listening to Big Noon Sports.
We got to talk about the AP poll. Like, are you kidding me? AP poll came out at 1:45 this morning. We got to discuss.
I haven't even taken a look at it, so you can just kind of bounce it off me if you want to. This is Big Noon Sports.
This is the Big Noon Sports Network.
It is Big Noon Sports, brought to you in part by Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama broker. Taking phone calls to the top of the hour. We can also take your questions, comments via the Tide 100.9 app. So download that, and then you can communicate through messaging. And in the meantime, we're going to communicate with Robbie Glenn, former Alabama baseball player, who wanted to chime in. Basketball. How are you, Robbie?
Hey, what's going on, Matt? Lars, how y'all doing?
Fantastic. Yeah, we're doing great. Doing great. How are you doing, buddy?
A little tired. You know, Stryker's been going through some issues being sick, but it's that time of the year where everybody's sick, so it's got us a little worried, keeping him away from everybody. But hopefully he's on the mend, and we'll get some sleep tonight. He'll be better. So.
Well, what but was your... Okay. That's good. Good to hear, man. It's I know what you and your wife go through on a day in, day out basis, and we'll get into information about Stryker at the end here. But hey, you're before we get into Alabama basketball, just your analysis of we haven't had a chance to talk to you about Alabama, Michigan, and then Michigan, Washington. So why don't we start with Alabama and Michigan? Were you surprised by that result?
Yeah, a little bit. I thought we had it when we went up there in the second half and had that long punt and downed it at the one, which he almost went in the end zone when we made that big hit. But I was shocked they came back, drove all the way, and then it kind of made me nervous going into overtime like everybody. It looked like just Michigan had a game plan to get us confused, and I hate it because I think we would have done the same thing to Washington that they did. I think we'd have lined up and beat them too, confused them. But it is what it is. Congratulations to Michigan. They win it, and on to next year. And I heard you about to talk about the rankings. I don't even want to get – that's just bull crap, but that's a whole other thing.
Well, yeah, no, I did want to get this from Matt. All right, so Michigan is one.
Okay.
Washington is two.
All right.
So you tell me who 3, 4, and 5 are.
3, 4, and 5 are. Georgia.
Yeah, Georgia 3.
Yeah, I mean, they probably have Texas, Alabama.
Yeah. Texas, Georgia, Alabama.
Okay.
I mean, Texas beat Alabama, so I can understand that.
That puts them back.
But Alabama beat Georgia, right? Yeah. And Alabama nearly beat Michigan. Alabama played Michigan a heck of a lot closer than Washington played Michigan. I mean, I think you can make the argument that Alabama should be three. Certainly four. And I have no idea what the AP voters were thinking. No idea. And that's why, but you know what, Robbie, it doesn't matter anymore.
But it is, I think,
Alabama fatigue.
It is. It's one more slap in Alabama's face, and I think that was just all that was. Because you look at last year, TCU got trucked. I mean, just got beat down and didn't drop at all. Nobody moved in the top four, and those games were horrible in the fight. Like, Bama lost in overtime, and they dropped behind Georgia. Yeah, Georgia beat Florida State. They lost head-to-head. That's the whole reason why Alabama didn't jump in front of Texas. It was just a slap. There you go, Saban. Sorry you lost. It was in overtime, but, you dropped to fifth. That's just, oh, well. Motivation to get ready for next year. New coaches coming in, new players. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, but, well, see, now I see another one. Maybe this is, this one's released January 9th. That's today. Michigan, Washington, Texas, Georgia, Alabama. That's what you asked, right?
Yeah.
I would say it's based on the fact that they have two losses, but so does Texas. Oh. There you go. And like you said a minute ago, it really doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter.
Let's talk some hoops. Have you seen Alabama play a lot this year? What do you think is going to happen tonight at Coleman?
Well, of course. I've been watching them like, when you're stuck inside with Stryker, you get to watch a lot, so I'm glad they've been playing. I hate they lost a couple of those big ones to Arizona, Purdue, but, I mean, they're legit. I mean, those teams are good, but Bama just wasn't shooting good, so when they're on, they can beat anybody. The only thing that scares me tonight, and Brian gets mad at me all the time because we play golf and I'll talk and I'm a baseball guy, but every time Bama goes against anyone with size and senior leadership, and that slow it down and play more physical, that seems to frustrate Bama. And if they can't hit those shots from outside, where do they get the points? How are you going to go inside on South Carolina when, I mean, I'm not a South Carolina guru. I saw they're 13-1, but they got some guys at 270, 265, 7 foot, 6'9", 6'10". Those are some big dudes on the inside. So if you're not hitting your shots on the outside, how are you going to get those points in? When those guys are very, I'm sure they're just going to box you out. It takes a lot to get through those guys. And we've been known not to do that. San Diego State last year, Purdue this year, but, Purdue does that to everybody with him. I'm just interested to see how they do that. Back in front of a home crowd, I hope it's packed. Students are back. I hope it's loud, energetic, and we do something.
And what have you thought about the play of Mark Sears so far this year? Matt and I have kind of gone back and forth on this, and just what a pleasant surprise, just how well he has grown into basically the number one scoring option.
Yeah, he is, and I'm glad he came back, and I made a good decision. He's come back as a leader. He's taken over, and he's leading the SEC or in second right now, or he's leading it. I can't remember, but I want him to cut down on his turnover still a little bit. He does get careless with the ball, some errant passes, but other than that, the man's shining. I mean, he's showing up every game. He's getting on the floor. He's doing what he has to do. I just, like I said, just watch the turnovers and get these other guys shooting and playing well like him. Yeah, we'll be fine. I hope we keep developing and getting there, and this team will be dangerous.
Hey, before we let you go, Robbie, give us an update on Alabama as we've now gotten into 2024, the major league level. Pitchers and catchers report in like 30 days. Alabama's going to start loosening up here too real soon as well.
Yeah, I can't wait. And you saw what kind of a fall they had. I mean, they beat Auburn and Florida State and with the long ball. So they got some bats. They got some pitchers. New coach, new energy. I'm ready to see them get going. I think they're going to be good, and they'll be tested right away when they get on the road in a big tournament. I also want to see the softball. The new fat, you know, Fouts is not there anymore, so let's see how this era starts. I want to see how they go. And then, you know, gymnastics started out with a big win in Vegas. So all the spring sports are starting, and it's going to be fun. It's my time of the year now, so I'll get to talk some more to y'all. Golf, everything, whatever y'all want to talk about.
Let's do it. Thank you. And my our
thank
best
you guys.
Family. And certainly
thank
Skyler. You.
You
bet.
All right. Bye, y'all.
All right. Thanks, Robbie. Hey, on the other side, Matt, we got to talk about another Matt Vrabel.
He gone. We will talk about that and a lot more as you listen to Big Noon Sports.
Now listen, Laura Lee Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as roll tide as houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A cold and windy afternoon, mostly cloudy, temperatures settling into the mid to upper 40s. Tonight clearing with a low at 32. A brighter day tomorrow, a good supply of sunshine, the high 48. Thursday, partially sunny and warmer, the high at 59. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 52 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Covering SEC sports like kudzu on the roadside. This is Big Noon Sports.
You just heard from James Spann giving us the weather. We did not get a long-range forecast, but as I was telling Lars earlier, next week, like Monday, no, Tuesday, Wednesday, 12. May I say it again? 12. It'll get down to 12 degrees. Now, see, that's Nebraska cold.
That's January. That's another day in January in the Midwest. Yeah,
that's probably the forecast until what?
Late? Until April.
Yep. That's crazy. So keep that in mind with your pets and your plants, and double check on your antifreeze too.
All right. Lars, so it's going out to break. I said Matt Vrabel, and I butchered it. Of course, it's Mike Vrabel, who I kind of know through our buddy Matt Finkus, because Finkus was who we had on yesterday. He's a friend of ours, longtime friend of mine. He lived with Vrabel during their years together at Ohio State, and he was drafted by the Steelers, then went to the Patriots as a free agent for the 2001 season. And he goes on to become kind of Mr. Patriot. And this is really one of the most incredible stats I've ever seen. You know, Vrabel, he lined up as a fullback sometimes, even though he was played line. He switched from defensive line to linebacker when he went to the NFL. And he's a very versatile guy. He finished his career with 10 receptions, and he just had 14 targets. Of those 10 receptions, how many touchdowns do you think he scored?
I don't know. They're probably specific plays that are designed for him to get the ball and probably score. What did you say, 10 catches? I'm going to say 4.
10.
He has 10 for 10 catches. Yes.
It's incredible.
I don't believe that.
He finishes square with 10 receptions, all for touchdowns.
No way.
No other player in NFL history has a better record of converting receptions to touchdowns.
I don't think you can have a better record.
10 for 10? And you're 100%. Probably the minimum has to be 10 receptions?
Like or that, 10 touchdowns.
Record.
Maybe it's based on touchdowns.
Never be broken. But, so he goes on, he gets into coaching, and again, like, people in Boston have been talking about this for a long time, that Vrabel, man, he'd be a great guy to eventually replace Belichick. And the thing is, the last game of Tom Brady's career in Foxborough as a Patriot, it was the first round of the playoffs against the Titans. What was Brady's last pass? Pick six.
Uh-huh.
DB, I forget the name of the DB's name, but Jenkins maybe, but he ran it in for a touchdown. That ended the Brady era. And you got to think that Robert Kraft and his son Jonathan, and his son Jonathan's about ready to take over the team, but you got to think that that's sort of embedded in their psyche, right? That Vrabel ended it for the run. And I know the Krafts have great affection for him. Vrabel just got fired by the Titans, which has stunned everybody. Everybody. I mean, I have never heard a player say a bad thing about Vrabel. And wouldn't surprise me if Kraft sees this as his chance to get the guy that he's always wanted, and he can't believe that he's a free agent, basically. And this could usher in the demise or the end of Bill Belichick in New England. That is how I see this playing out. I'm guessing that Belichick and Kraft are going to meet at Kraft's house tonight. They'll have a couple glasses of wine, and they will figure out what they're going to do. And Belichick already has shown a little bit of weakness by saying that he will give up GM responsibility, because I think Belichick is like, oh my God, I might lose my job here. And now that Vrabel is open, it just makes too much sense.
I've seen somebody propose this scenario, and it's like 99% a pipe dream here, but you have Belichick stay as the head coach. You pay Mike Vrabel head coach money to come be your defensive coordinator and head coach in waiting.
Uh-huh.
You bring back Josh McDaniels, who has been a disgrace as a head coach, so he's not going to be commanding much money at this point. And you just ride it out, because McDaniels was Mac's offensive coordinator when Mac went to the Pro Bowl as a rookie. So you get some draft capital, you bring in that coaching staff, you get Belichick one more ring, ride off into the sunset, and introduce the Mike Vrabel era in New England.
You think Mac Jones is going to lead the Patriots to a Super Bowl?
Never said that. From the rumors I've seen and stuff like that, is one of the requirements of a new general manager or a new head coach in New England is to not quite give up on Mac Jones yet, to give him another fair shot. Because, again, the rumor is that Kraft believes that the offensive play, first off, Matt Patricia as an offensive coordinator.
Horrible.
Dumbest decision they could have made there.
But Belichick made a series of dumb decisions.
He did. He can't build a roster, which is why I think they're kind of forcing his hand into giving up the general manager position.
I think the last Pro Bowl player he picked was a decade ago, and it was a freaking punter. I think the debate over who is more important, Belichick or Brady.
That's over. That debate.
Yeah, it was Brady.
It's been resolved.
Yeah.
And you know, this has got to irritate Bill Belichick.
I just, even though they had lousy last couple of years, I think Belichick's, he may be trying to hang on too long. And I hate it when players/coaches wait too long, and then you remember, and
we all
was
see
it. Was it Namath that ended up on the sideline with the Rams or something late?
Yeah.
And, you know, my man Henry Aaron, who's my favorite all-time sports athlete, anyone of that nature.
Jerry Rice. Know,
he went back to Milwaukee and tried to be a DH, and you see it too often. Now, granted, he's not a player; he is a coach.
I think Kraft is. I think he's going to fire Belichick. Probably, I think
tonight over wine.
Yeah, that
will there be a fistfight?
I have been sort of virtually in the room when Kraft has made these decisions, right? Through my relationships with people close to or in the Pats organization, and how it happened with Brady, it's going to happen the same way with Kraft, or the same way with Belichick. Go to Kraft's house, try to kiss the ring, and in Brady's case, he said, I'm leaving. Kraft was stunned. But I think in Belichick's case, he's going to say, I want to stay, and Kraft said, sorry, I think it's time to move on.
Was Logan Ryan the guy?
Yeah, Logan Ryan. That's it. Yeah, thank you.
And then they ended up playing together for the Bucks.
Yeah.
That's a pretty cool story. All right, Lars, enjoyed it. We'll do this again tomorrow, 22 hours. Hats off to Wyatt. Fulton, got it. All right. We thank our guests, Brian Pasink and Ross Bollinger, as we continue to bring you Big Noon Sports every day, noon to 2. It's Monday through Friday. We'll be right back.